Hello and welcome to Poets Corner. I'm your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Rexy. Again today, I will be reading from various poets' work from the book Best Remembered Poems. So, Poets Potpourri Part 2. I'll start with If by Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired of waiting, or being lied about and don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve you long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if the men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. This poem is called I Wandered Lonely as a Cloud by William Wordsworth. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils. Beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze. Continuous as the stars that shine and twinkle on the Milky Way, they stretched in never-ending line along a margin of a bay. 10,000 saw I at a glance, tossing their heads in a sprightly dance. The waves beside them danced, but they outdid the sparkling waves in glee. A poet could not but be gay in such a jocund company. I gazed and gazed, but little thought what wealth the show to me had brought. For oft, when on my couch I lie, in vacant or in pensive mood, they flash upon that inward eye which is the bliss of solitude. And then my heart with pleasure fills and dances with the daffodils. And now, O Captain, My Captain by Walt Whitman. This poem is a salute to the assassinated President Abraham Lincoln. O Captain, My Captain, our fearful trip is done. The ship has weathered every rack. The prize we sought is won. The port is near. The bells I hear. The people all exulting, while follow eyes and steady keel the vessel grim and daring. But oh, heart, heart, heart! Oh, the bleeding drops of red where on the deck my captain lies, fallen cold and dead. O Captain, My Captain, rise up and hear the bells. Rise up, for you the flag is flung, for you the bugle trills. For you, bouquets and ribboned wreaths. For you, the shores a-crowding. For you, they call, the swaying mass, their eager faces turning. Here, Captain, dear father, the arm beneath your head. It is some dream that on that deck you've fallen cold and dead. My captain does not answer. His lips are pale and still. My father does not feel my arm. He has no pulse nor will. The ship is anchored safe and sound, its voyage closed and done. From fearful trip the victor ship comes in with object won. Exult, O shores, and ring, O bells! But I, with mournful tread, walk the deck my captain lies, fallen cold and dead. Curfew Must Not Ring Tonight is by Rose Hartwick Thorpe, an American poet. And what's amazing is she wrote this ballad, really, a story, when she was 17, about a story she read from English history that she took to be a true story. England's sun was slowly setting o'er the hilltops far away, filling all the land with beauty at the close of one sad day. And its last rays kissed the forehead of a man and maiden fair, he with steps so slow and weary, she with sunny floating hair. He with bowed head sad and thoughtful, she with lips so cold and white, struggled to keep back the murmur, curfew must not ring tonight. Sexton Bessie's white lips faltered, pointing to the prison old, with its walls so tall and gloomy, moss-grown walls dark, damp, and cold. I've a lover in that prison, doomed this very night to die, at the ringing of the curfew, and no earthly help is nigh. Cromwell will not come till sunset. And her lips grew strangely white as she spoke in husky whispers, curfew must not ring tonight. Bessie, calmly spoke the sexton, every word pierced her young heart, like a gleaming death-winged arrow, like a deadly poisoned dart. Long, long years I've rung the curfew from that gloomy, shadowed tower. Every evening, just at sunset, it has tolled the twilight hour. I've done my duty ever, tried to do it just and right. Now I'm old. I will not miss it. Curfew bell must ring tonight. Wild her eyes and pale her features, stern and white her thoughtful brow, and within her heart's deep center, Bessie made a solemn vow. She had listened while the judges read without a tear or sigh. At the ringing of the curfew, Basil Underwood must die. And her breath came fast and faster, and her eyes grew large and bright. One low murmur, faintly spoken, curfew must not ring tonight. She with quick step bounded forward, sprang within the old church door, left the old man coming slowly paths he'd trod so oft before. Not one moment paused the maiden, but with cheek and brow aglow, staggered up the gloomy tower where the bell swung to and fro. Then she climbed the slimy ladder on which fell no ray of light, upward, upward still, her pale lips saying, curfew shall not ring tonight. She has reached the topmost ladder, o'er her hangs the great dark bell. Awful is the gloom beneath her, like the pathway down to hell. See, the ponderous tongue is swinging till the hour of curfew now, and the sight has chilled her bosom, stopped her breath, and paled her brow. Shall she let it ring? No, never! Her eyes flash with sudden light as she springs and grasps it firmly. Curfew shall not ring tonight. Out she swung, far out, The city seemed a speck of light below, there twixt heaven and earth suspended, as the bell swung to and fro, and the sexton at the bell rope, old and deaf, heard not the bell. Sadly thought the twilight curfew rang young Basil's funeral knell. Still the maiden clinging firmly, quivering lip and fair face white, still her frightened heart's wild beating, curfew shall not ring tonight. It was over. The bell ceased swaying, and the maiden stepped once more firmly on the damp old ladder, where for 100 years before human foot had not been planted. The brave deed that she had done should be told long ages after, as the rays of setting sun light the sky with golden beauty. Aged sires with heads of white tell the children why the curfew did not ring that one sad night. O'er the distant hills came Cromwell. Bessie sees him, and her brow, lately white with sickening terror, has no anxious traces now. At his feet she tells her story, shows her hands all bruised and torn, and her sweet young face, still haggard, with the anguish it had worn, touched his heart with sudden pity, lit his eyes with misty light. "Go, your lover lives," cried Cromwell. "Curfew shall not ring tonight." Wide they flung the massive portals, led the prisoner forth to die, all his bright young life before him, neath the darkening English sky. Bessie came, with flying footsteps, eyes aglow with love light sweet, kneeling on the turf beside him, laid his pardon at his feet. In his brave, strong arms he clasped her, kissed the face upturned and white, whispered, "Darling, you have saved me. Curfew will not ring tonight." This is another sort of ballad written by Ernest Lawrence Thayer, called "The Greatest Poem Ever Written About Baseball, Casey at the Bat." The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2, but with one inning more to play. And then, when Cooney died at first and Barrows did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast. They thought if only Casey could but get a whack at that, we'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake, and the former was a Lulu, and the latter was a cake. So upon that stricken multitude grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball. And when the dust had lifted, and the men saw what had occurred, there was Johnny safe at second, and Flynn a-hugging third. Then from 5,000 throats and more there rose a lusty yell. It rumbled through the valley, it rattled in the dell. It knocked upon the mountain and recoiled upon the flat, for Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile on Casey's face. And when responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat. No stranger in the crowd could doubt was Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt. Then while the widening pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered sphere came hurtling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman, the ball unheeded sped. "That ain't my style," said Casey. Strike one, the umpire said. From the benches, black with people, there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on a stern and distant shore. Kill him! Kill the umpire! Shouted someone on the stand, and it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher, and once more the sphere-eyed flew, but Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, Strike two! Fraud! Cried the maddened thousands. An echo answered, Fraud! But one scornful look from Casey, and the audience was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold. They saw his muscles strain. And they knew that Casey wouldn't let that ball go by again. The sneer is gone from Casey's lip. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go, and now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land, the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out. Crossing the Bar by Alfred Lord Tennyson. Sunset and evening star, and one clear call for me. And may there be no moaning of the bar when I put out to sea. But such a tide as moving seems asleep, too full for sound and foam, when that which drew from out the boundless deep turns again home. Twilight and evening bell, and after that the dark, and may there be no sadness of farewell when I embark. For though from out our bourne of time and place the flood may bear me far, I hope to see my pilot face to face when I have crossed the bar. This poem is Bed in the Summer by Robert Louis Stevenson. In winter, I get up at night and dress by yellow candlelight. In summer, quite the other way, I have to go to bed by day. I have to go to bed and see the birds still hopping on the tree, or hear the grown-up people's feet still going past me in the street. And does it not seem hard to you when all the sky is clear and blue, and I should like so much to play, to have to go to bed by day? Ozymandias by Percy Bysshe Shelley. I met a traveler from an antique land who said, Two vast and trunkless legs of stone stand in the desert. Near them, on the sand, half sunk, a shattered visage lies, whose frown and wrinkled lip and sneer of cold command tell that its sculptor well those passions read which yet survive, stamped on these lifeless things. The hand that mocked them, and the heart that fed, and on the pedestal these words appear. My name is Ozymandias, King of Kings. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains. Round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare, the lone and level sands stretch far away. The Old Swimmin' Hole by James Whitcomb Riley. Oh, the old swimmin' hole, where the creek is still and deep, looked like a baby river that was laying half asleep, and the gurgle of the water round the drift just below sounded like the laugh of something we once used to know, before we could remember anything but the eyes of the angels looking out as we left paradise. But the merry days of youth is beyond our control, and it's hard to part forever with the old swimming hole. Oh, the old swimming hole, in the happy days of yore, when I used to lean above it on the old sycamore. Oh, it showed me a face in its warm sunny tide that gazed back at me, so gay and glorified. It made me love myself as I leaped to caress my shadow, smiling up at me with such tenderness. But them days is past and gone, and old times tuck its toll from the old man come back to the old swimming hole. Oh, the old swimming hole, in the long lazy days when the humdrum of school made so many runaways, how pleasant was the journey down the old dusty lane, where the tracks of our bare feet was all printed so plain. You could tell by the dint of the heel and the sole there was lots of fun on hands at the old swimming hole. But the lost joys is past. Let your tears and sorrow roll like the rain that used to dabble up the old swimming hole. There the bulrushes growed and the cattail so tall, and the sunshine and shadow fell over it all. And it mottled the water with amber and gold, till the glad lilies rocked in the ripples that rolled, and the snake feeder's four gauzy wings fluttered by like the ghost of a daisy dropped out of the sky. Or a wounded apple blossom in the breeze's control as it cut across some orchard towards the old swimming hole. Oh, the old swimming hole. When I last saw the place, the scenes was all changed, like the change in my face. The bridge of the railroad now crosses the spot where the old diving log lay sunk and forgot. Where the old diving log lay sunk and forgot, and I stray down the banks where the trees used to be. But I never again will their shade shelter me. And I wish in my sorrow I could strip to the soul and dive off in my grave like the old swimming hole. Here's a short little poem called Antigonish, and it's written by Hugh Mearns. And it's only four lines long, but he himself wrote a bunch of parodies of it, so I'll read those as well afterwards. As I was going up the stair, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish he'd stay away. Okay, here's his own parodies of this. As I was sitting in my chair, I knew the bottom wasn't there, nor legs, nor back, but I just sat, ignoring little things like that. As I was falling down the stair, I met a bump that wasn't there. It might have put me on the shelf, except I wasn't there myself. As I was letting down my hair, I met a guy who didn't care. He didn't care again today. I love 'em when they get that way. One night, I met, when stepping out, a gal who wasn't there about. I said, "Hello, and how are you?" She didn't say, so I never knew. As I was robbing Chelsea Bank, I met a non-existent zank. He did not whiffle, wooze, or whoop. That's why I had to shut him up. The Arrow and the Song by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. I shot an arrow into the air. It fell to earth, I knew not where. For so swiftly it flew, the sight could not follow it in its flight. I breathed a song into the air. It fell to earth, I knew not where. For who has sight so keen and strong that it can follow the flight of song? Long, long afterward, in an oak, I found the arrow, still unbroke. And the song, from beginning to end, I found again in the heart of a friend. And another poem of Longfellow's called A Psalm of Life. what the heart of the young man said to the psalmist. Tell me not in mournful numbers, life is but an empty dream. For the soul is dead that slumbers, and things are not what they seem. Life is real, life is earnest, and the grave is not its goal. Dust thou art, to dust returnest, was not spoken of the soul. Not enjoyment and not sorrow is our destined end or way, but to act that each tomorrow find us farther than today. Art is long and time is fleeting, and our hearts, though stout and brave, still like muffled drums are beating funeral marches to the grave. In the world's broad field of battle, in the bivouac of life, be not like dumb-driven cattle, be a hero in the strife. Trust no future, howe'er pleasant, and let the dead past bury its dead. Act, act in the living present, heart within, and God o'erhead. Lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime, and departing leave behind us footprints on the sands of time. Footprints that perhaps another, sailing o'er life's solemn main, a forlorn and shipwrecked brother, seeing shall take heart again. Let us then be up and doing with a heart for any fate, still achieving, still pursuing, learn to labor and to wait. Thank you for listening to Poets Potpourri, Part 2. Until next time, this is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Rexy, wishing you good evening. Remember, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left-click on Broadcast Info and Audio, then under Programming Links, left-click on Demand Podcasts. You can now listen to Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.